throngs of merry-faced revelers around them to murmuring. But Aelin continued down the street, and then down another. At the third, she slowed her steps and rocked into him, beginning to sing a bawdy tune in a very off-key, drunken voice. And thus they became two ordinary citizens out to celebrate the prince's birthday, staggering from one tavern to the next. No one paid them any heed, not when all eyes were fixed on the glass castle towering behind them. The swaying made his head spin. If he fainted, one more block, she promised. This was all some hallucination. It had to be. No one would actually have been stupid enough to try to rescue him, and especially not his own queen. Even if he'd seen her cut down half a dozen men like so many stalks of wheat. Come on, come on, she panted, scanning the decorated street. And he knew she wasn't talking to him. People were milling about, pausing to ask what the palace commotion was about. Aelin led them through the crowd, mere cloaked and stumbling drunks, right up to the black carriage for hire that pulled along the curb as though it had been waiting. The door sprang open. His cousin shoved him inside, right onto the floor, and shut the door behind her. They're already stopping every carriage at the major intersections, Lysandra said, as Aelin pried open the hidden luggage compartment beneath one of the benches. It was big enough to fit a very tightly curled person, but Adian was absolutely massive, and... In. Get in, now, she ordered, and didn't wait for Adian to move before she heaved him into the compartment. He groaned. Blood had started seeping from his side, but he'd live. That is, if any of them lived through the next few minutes. Aelin shut the panel beneath the cushion, wincing at the thud of wood on flesh, and grabbed the wet rag Lysandra had pulled from an old hat box. Are you hurt? Lysandra asked, as the carriage started into a leisurely pace through the reveler-clogged streets. Aelin's heart was pounding so wildly that she thought she would vomit, but she shook her head as she wiped her face. So much blood. Then the remnants of her makeup. Then more blood. Lysandra handed her a second rag to wipe down her chest, neck, and hands, and then held out the loose, long-sleeved green dress she'd brought. Now, 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 Lysandra breathed. Aelin ripped her bloodied cloak away and tossed it to Lysandra, who rose to shove it into the compartment beneath her own seat, as Aelin shimmied into the dress. Lysandra's fingers were surprisingly steady as she buttoned up the back, then made quick work of Aelin's hair, handed her a pair of gloves, and slung a jeweled necklace around her throat. A fan was pressed into her hands the moment the gloves were on, concealing any trace of blood. The carriage halted at the sound of harsh male voices. Lysandra had just rolled up the curtains when stomping steps approached, followed by four of the king's guard peering into the carriage with sharp, merciless eyes. Lysandra thrust open the window. Why are we being stopped? The guard yanked open the door and stuck his head in. Aelin noticed a smudge of blood on the floor a moment before he did, and flinched back, covering it with her skirts. Sir, Lysandra cried, an explanation is necessary at once. Aelin waved her fan with a lady's horror, praying that her cousin kept quiet in his little compartment. On the street beyond, some revelers had paused to watch the inspection, wide-eyed, curious, and not at all inclined to help the two women inside the carriage. The guard looked them over with a sneer, the expression deepening as his eyes alighted on Lysandra's tattooed wrist. I owe you nothing, whore. He spat out another filthy word at both of them, and then shouted, Search the compartment in the back.
We are on our way to an appointment, Lysandra hissed,
but he slammed the door in her face. The carriage jostled as the men leaped onto the back and opened the rear compartment. After a moment, someone slammed a hand onto the side of the carriage and shouted, Move on! They didn't dare stop looking offended, didn't dare stop fanning themselves for the next two blocks, or the two after that, until the driver thumped the top of the carriage twice. All clear. Aelin jumped off the bench and flung open the compartment. Adian had vomited, but he was awake and looking more than a bit put out as she beckoned him to emerge.
One more stop, and then we're there.
Quick,
said Lysandra, peering casually out the window.
The others are almost here.
The alley was barely wide enough to fit both of the carriages that ambled toward each other. No more than two large vehicles slowing to avoid colliding as they passed.
Lysandra flung open the door just as they were aligned with the other carriage,
and Kaol's tight face appeared across the way as he did the same.
"Go, go, go," she said to Adian, shoving him over the small gap between the coaches.
He stumbled, grunting as he landed against the captain. Lysandra said behind her,
"I'll be there soon. Good luck."
Aelin leaped into the other carriage, shutting the door behind her, and they continued on down the street. She was breathing so hard that she thought she'd never get enough air. Adian slumped onto the floor, keeping low.
Kaol said, "Everything all right?"
She could only manage a nod, grateful he didn't push for any other answers. But it wasn't all right. Not at all.
The carriage, driven by one of Kaol's men, took them another few blocks, right to the border of the slums, where they got out on a deserted, decrepit street. She trusted Kaol's men, but only so far. Taking Adian right to her apartment seemed like asking for trouble. With Adian sagging between them, she and Kaol hurried down the next several blocks, taking the long way back to the warehouse to dodge any tail, listening so hard they barely breathed. But then they were at the warehouse, and Adian managed to stand long enough for Kaol to slide the door open before they rushed inside, into the dark and safety at last. Kaol took Aelin's place at Adian's side as she lingered by the door. Grunting at the wait, he managed to get her cousin up the stairs. "He's got an injury along his ribs," she said as she forced herself to wait, to monitor the warehouse door for any signs of pursuers. "It's bleeding." Kaol gave her a confirming nod over his shoulder. When her cousin and the captain were almost to the top of the stairs, when it became clear no one was about to burst in, she followed them. But pausing had cost her. Pausing had let the razor-sharp focus slip, let every thought she'd kept at bay come sweeping in. Every step she took was heavier than the last. One foot up, then the next, then the next. By the time she made it to the second floor, Kaol had taken Adian into the guest bedroom. The sound of running water gurgled out to greet her. Aelin left the front door unlocked for Lysandra, and for a moment, she just stood in her apartment, bracing a hand on the back of the couch, staring at nothing. When she was certain she could move again, she strode into her bedroom. She was naked before she reached the bathing chamber, and she sat herself right in the cold, dry tub before she turned on the water. Once she emerged, clean and wearing one of Sam's old white shirts and a pair of his undershorts, Kaol was waiting for her on the couch. She didn't dare look at his face. Not yet. Lysandra popped her head in from the guest room.
"I'm just finishing cleaning him up. He should be fine if he doesn't burst the stitches again. No infection, thank the gods."
Aelin lifted a limp hand in thanks, also not daring to look into the room behind Lysandra to see the massive figure lying on the bed, a towel around his waist. If Kaol and the courtesan had been introduced, she didn't particularly care. There was no good place to have this talk with Kaol, so she just stood in the center of the room and watched as the captain rose from his seat, his shoulders tight.
"What happened?"
he demanded. She swallowed once.
"I killed a lot of people today. I'm not in the mood to analyze it." "That's never bothered you before."
She couldn't dredge up the energy to even feel the sting of the words.
"The next time you decide you don't trust me, try not to prove it at a time when my life or Adian's is on the line."
A flash of his bronze eyes told her he'd somehow already seen Nezrin. Kaol's voice was hard and cold as ice as he said,
"You tried to kill him. You said you'd try to get him out, to help him. And you tried to kill him."
The bedroom where Lysander was working had gone silent. Aelin let out a low snarl.
"You want to know what I did?
I gave him 1 minute. I gave up 1 minute of my escape to him. Do you understand what can happen in 1 minute? Because I gave one to Dorian when he attacked Adian and me today, to capture us. I gave him a minute in which the fate of my entire kingdom could have changed forever. I chose the son of my enemy.
He gripped the back of the sofa, as though physically restraining himself.
You're a liar. You've always been a liar. And today was no exception. You had a sword over his head.
I did, she spat. And before Felique arrived to wreck everything, I was going to do it. I should have done it, as anyone with common sense would have, because Dorian is gone.
And there was her breaking heart, fracturing at the monster she'd seen living in Dorian's eyes. The demon that would hunt her and Adian down, that would stalk her dreams.
I do not owe you an apology, she said to Kaol. Don't talk down to me like you're my queen, he snapped.
No, I'm not your queen, but you are going to have to decide soon whom you serve, because the Dorian you knew is gone forever. Otterlin's future does not depend on him anymore.
The agony in Kaol's eyes hit her like a physical blow, and she wished she had mastered herself better when explaining it, but she needed him to understand the risk she'd taken, and the danger he'd let Aerobin manipulate him into putting her in. He had to know that there was a hard line that she must draw, and that she would hold, to protect her own people. So she said, "Go to the roof and take the first watch." Kaol blinked.
I'm not your queen, but I'm going to attend to my cousin right now. And since I hope Nezrin is lying low, someone needs to take the watch. Unless you'd like for us all to be caught unawares by the king's men.
Kaol didn't bother replying as he turned on his heel and strode out. She listened to him storming up the stairs and onto the roof, and it was only then that she loosed a breath and scrubbed at her face. When she lowered her hands, Lysandra was standing in the guest bedroom doorway, her eyes wide.
What do you mean, queen?
Aelin winced, swearing under her breath.
That's exactly the word I'd use,
Lysandra said, her face pale.
Aelin said, My name... Oh, I know what your real name is.
Aelin.
Shit.
You understand why I had to keep it a secret?
Of course I do,
Lysandra said, pursing her lips.
You don't know me, and more lives than yours are at stake.
No, I do know you.
Gods, why were the words so damn hard to get out?
The longer the hurt flickered in Lysandra's eyes, the wider the gap across the room felt. Aelin swallowed.
Until I had Adian back, I wasn't going to take any chances. I knew I would have to tell you the moment you saw us in a room together.
And Aerobin knows.
Those green eyes were hard as chips of ice.
He's always known. This changes nothing between us, you know. Nothing.
Lysandra glanced behind her, to the bedroom where Adian now lay unconscious, and loosed a long breath.
The resemblance is uncanny. Gods, the fact that you went undiscovered for so many years boggles the mind.
She studied Adian again.
Even though he's a handsome bastard, it'd be like kissing you.
Her eyes were still hard, but a flicker of amusement gleamed there. Aelin grimaced.
I could have lived without knowing that. She shook her head. I don't know why I was ever nervous you would start bowing and scraping.
Light and understanding danced in Lysandra's eyes.
Where would the fun be in that?
Chapter 20. Several days after running into the wing leader, Aelin Lochin's ankle was sore, her lower back a tight knot, and her shoulders aching as she took the last step into the Aerie. At least she'd made it without encountering any horrors in the halls, though the climb had nearly killed her. She hadn't grown accustomed to the steep, endless steps of Morath in the 2 months since she'd been dragged to this horrible place by Vernon. Just completing her daily tasks made her ruined ankle throb with pain she hadn't experienced in years. And today was the worst yet. She would have to scrounge up some herbs from the kitchen tonight to soak her foot. Maybe even some oils, if the ornery cook was feeling generous enough. Compared with some of the other denizens of Morath, he was fairly mild. He tolerated her presence in the kitchen and her requests for herbs,
especially when she oh so sweetly offered to clean a few dishes or prepare meals. And he'd never blinked twice when she inquired about when the next shipment of food and supplies would come in. Because, oh, she'd loved his whatever fruit pie. And it would be so nice to have it again. Easy to flatter. Easy to trick. Making people see and hear what they wanted to. One of the many weapons in her arsenal. A gift from Aneth, the Lady of Wise Things, Finula had claimed. The only gift, Elite often thought, that she'd ever received. Beyond her old nursemaid's good heart and wits. She'd never told Finula that she often prayed to the clever goddess to bestow another gift on those who made the years in Perranth a living hell. Death. And not the gentle sort. Not like Silba, who offered peaceful ends, or Hellas, who offered violent burning ones. No, deaths at Aneth's hands, at the hands of Hellas's consort, were brutal, bloody, and slow. The kind of death Elite expected to receive at any moment these days, from the witches who prowled the halls, or from the dark-eyed duke, his lethal soldiers, or the white-haired wingleader who'd tasted her blood like fine wine. She'd had nightmares about it ever since. That is, when she could sleep at all. Elite had needed to rest twice on her way to the Eyrie, and her limp was deep by the time she reached the top of the tower, bracing herself for the beasts and the monsters who rode them. An urgent message had come for the wingleader while Elite was cleaning her room, and when Elite explained that the wingleader was not there, the man heaved a sigh of relief, shoved the letter in Elite's hand, and said to find her. And then the man had run. She should have suspected it. It had taken two heartbeats to note and catalog the man's details, his tells and ticks. Sweaty, his face pale, pupils diluted. He'd sagged at the sight of Elite when she opened the door. Bastard. Most men, she'd decided, were bastards of varying degrees. Most of them were monsters. None worse than Vernon. Elite scanned the Eyrie. Empty. Not even a handler to be seen. The hay floor was fresh, the feeding troughs full of meat and grain. But the food was untouched by the wyverns whose massive leathery bodies loomed beyond the archways, perched on wooden beams jutting over the plunge, as they surveyed the keep and the army below like 13 mighty lords. Limping as close as she dared to one of the massive openings, Elite peered out at the view. It was exactly as the wingleader's map had depicted it in the spare moments when she could sneak a look. They were surrounded by ashy mountains, and though she'd been in a prison wagon for the long journey here, she had taken note of the forest she'd spied in the distance and the rushing of the massive river they had passed days before they ascended the broad, rocky mountain road. In the middle of nowhere, that's where Morath was, and the view before her confirmed it. No cities, no towns, and an entire army surrounding her. She shoved back the despair that crept into her veins. She had never seen an army before coming here. Soldiers, yes. But she'd been 8 when her father passed her up onto Vernon's horse and kissed her goodbye, promising to see her soon. She hadn't been in Orinth to witness the army that seized its riches, its people. And she'd been locked in a tower at Perranth Castle by the time the army reached her family's lands. And her uncle became the king's ever-faithful servant and stole her father's title. Her title, Lady of Perranth. That's what she should have been. Not that it mattered now. There wasn't much of Terrison's court left to belong to. None of them had come for her in those initial months of slaughter. And in the years since, none had remembered that she existed. Perhaps they assumed she was dead. Like Aelin, that wild queen who might have been. Perhaps they were all dead themselves. And maybe, given the dark army now spread before her, that was a mercy. Elite gazed across the flickering lights of the war camp, and a chill went down her spine. An army to crush whatever resistance Finula had once whispered about, during the long nights they were locked in that tower in Perranth. Perhaps the white-haired wingleader herself would lead that army, on the wyvern with shimmering wings. A fierce, cool wind blew into the Eyrie, and Elite leaned into it, gulping it down as if it were fresh water. There had been so many nights in Perranth when only the wailing wind had kept her company. when she could have sworn it sang ancient songs to lull her into sleep. Here the wind was a colder, sleeker thing. Serpentine, almost.
Entertaining such fanciful things will only distract you,
Finula would have chided. She wished her nurse were here. But wishing had done her no good these past 10 years, and Elide, Lady of Peranth, had no one coming for her.
Soon, she reassured herself.
Soon the next caravan of supplies would crawl up the mountain road, and when it went back down, Elide would be stowed away in one of the wagons, free at long last. And then she would run somewhere far, far away, where they'd never heard of Terrasen or Otterlin, and leave these people to their miserable continent. A few weeks. Then she might stand a chance of escaping. If she survived until then. If Vernon didn't decide he truly did have some wicked purpose in dragging her here. If she didn't wind up with those poor people, caged inside the surrounding mountains, screaming for salvation every night. She'd overheard the other servants whisper about the dark, fell things that went on under those mountains. People being splayed open on black stone altars, and then forged into something new. Something other. For what wretched purpose Elide had not yet learned. And mercifully, beyond the screaming, she'd never encountered whatever was being broken and pieced together beneath the earth. The witches were bad enough. Elide shuddered as she took another step into the vast chamber. The crunching of hay under her two small shoes and the clank of her chains were the only sounds.
Wingly,
a roar blasted through the air, the stones, the floor, so loud that her head swam and she cried out. Tumbling back, her chains tangled as she slipped on the hay. Hard iron-tipped hands dug into her shoulders and kept her upright. If you are not a spy, a wicked voice purred in her ear, then why are you here, Elide Locken? Elide wasn't faking it when her hand shook as she held out the letter, not daring to move. The wingleader stepped around her, circling Elide like prey, her long white braid stark against her leather flying gear. The details hit Elide like stones, eyes like burnt gold. A face so impossibly beautiful that Elide was struck dumb by it. A lean, honed body, and a steady, fluid grace in every movement, every breath, that suggested the wingleader could easily use the assortment of blades on her. Human only in shape, immortal and predatory in every other sense. Fortunately, the wingleader was alone. Unfortunately, those gold eyes held nothing but death. Elide said,
This came for you.
The stammer. That was faked. People usually couldn't wait to get away when she stammered and stuttered, though she doubted the people who ran this place would care about the stammer if they decided to have some fun with a daughter of Terrasen, if Vernon handed her over. The wingleader held Elide's gaze as she took the letter. I'm surprised the seal isn't broken, though if you were a good spy, you would know how to do it without breaking the wax.
If I were a good spy, Elide breathed, I could also read.
A bit of truth to temper the witch's distrust. The witch blinked, and then sniffed, as if trying to detect a lie. You speak well for a mortal, and your uncle is a lord, yet you cannot read? Elide nodded. More than the leg, more than the drudgery, it was that miserable shortcoming that hounded her. Her nurse, Finula, couldn't read, but Finula had been the one to teach her how to take note of things, to listen, and to think. During the long days when they'd had nothing to do but needlepoint, her nurse had taught her to mark the little details, each stitch, while also never losing sight of the larger image.
There will come a day when I am gone, Elide, and you will need to have every weapon in your arsenal sharp and ready to strike.
Neither of them had thought that Elide might be the one who left first. But she would not look back, not even for Finula, once she ran. And when she found that new life, that new place, she would never gaze northward to Terrasen and wonder, either. She kept her eyes on the ground.
I know basic letters, but my lessons stopped when I was 8.
At your uncle's behest, I assume. The witch paused, rotating the envelope and showing the jumble of letters to her, tapping on them with an iron nail. This says Manon Blackbeak. You see anything like this again, bring it to me. Aleed bowed her head, meek, submissive, just the way these witches liked their humans.
Of course.
And why don't you stop pretending to be a stammering, cowering wretch while you're at it? Aleed kept her head bent low enough that her hair hopefully covered any glimmer of surprise.
I've tried to be pleasing.
I smelled your human fingers all over my map. It was careful, cunning work, not to put one thing out of order, not to touch anything but the map. Thinking of escaping after all?
Of course not, mistress.
Oh, gods. She was so, so dead. Look at me. Aleed obeyed. The witch hissed, and Aleed flinched as she shoved Aleed's hair out of her eyes. A few strands fell to the ground, sliced off by the iron nails. I don't know what game you're playing. If you're a spy, if you're a thief, if you're just looking out for yourself. But do not pretend that you are some meek, pathetic little girl when I can see that vicious mind working behind your eyes. Aleed didn't dare drop the mask. Was it your mother or father who was related to Vernon?
Strange question.
But Aleed had known for a while she would do anything, say anything, to stay alive and unharmed.
My father was Vernon's elder brother, she said.
And where did your mother come from? She didn't give that old grief an inch of room in her heart.
She was lowborn, a laundress.
Where did she come from? Why did it matter? The golden eyes were fixed on her, unyielding.
Her family was originally from Rosamel, in the northwest of Terrison.
I know where it is. Aleed kept her shoulders bowed, waiting. Get out. Hiding her relief, Aleed opened her mouth to make her goodbyes, when another roar set the stones vibrating. She couldn't conceal her flinch. It's just Abraxos, Manon said, a hint of a smile forming on her cruel mouth, a bit of light gleaming in those golden eyes. Her mount must make her happy, then, if witches could be happy. He's hungry. Aleed's mouth went dry. At the sound of his name, a massive triangular head, scarred badly around one eye, poked into the airy. Aleed's knees wobbled, but the witch went right up to the beast and placed her iron-tipped hands on his snout. You swine, the witch said. You need the whole mountain to know you're hungry. The wyvern huffed into her hands, his giant teeth. Oh, gods, some of them were iron. So close to Manon's arms. One bite and the wing leader would be dead. One bite. And yet, the wyvern's eyes lifted and met Aleed's. Not looked at, but met. As if... Aleed kept perfectly still, even though every instinct was roaring at her to run for the stairs. The wyvern nudged past Manon, the floor shuddering beneath him, and sniffed in Aleed's direction. Then those giant, depthless eyes moved down. To her legs. No. To the chain. There were so many scars all over him. So many brutal lines. She did not think Manon had made them. Not with the way she spoke to him. Abraxos was smaller than the others, she realized. Far smaller. And yet the wing leader had picked him. Aleed tucked that information away, too. If Manon had a soft spot for broken things... Perhaps she would spare her as well. Abraxos lowered himself to the ground, stretching out his neck until his head rested on the hay not 10 feet from Aleed. Those giant black eyes stared up at her, almost dog-like. Enough, Abraxos, Manon hissed, grabbing a saddle from the rack by the wall.
How do they exist?
Aleed breathed. She'd heard stories of wyverns and dragons. And she remembered glimpses of the little folk and the fae. But... Manon hauled the leather saddle over to her mount. The king made them. I don't know how, and it doesn't matter. The king of Otterland made them. Like whatever was being made inside those mountains. The man who had shattered her life, murdered her parents, doomed her to this.
Don't be angry,
Finula had said, Be smart. And soon the king and his miserable empire wouldn't be her concern anyway.
Elide said, Your mount doesn't seem evil.
Abraxos's tail thumped on the ground, the iron spikes in it glinting. A giant lethal dog with wings. Manon huffed a cold laugh, strapping the saddle into place.
No. However he was made, something went wrong with that part.
Elide didn't think that constituted going wrong, but kept her mouth shut. Abraxos was still staring up at her, and the wingleader said, Let's go hunt, Abraxos.
The beast perked up, and Elide jumped back a step, wincing as she landed hard on her ankle.
The wyvern's eyes shot to her, as if aware of the pain. But the wingleader was already finishing with the saddle, and didn't bother to look in her direction as Elide limped out.
You soft-hearted worm, Manon hissed at Abraxos, once the cunning, many-faced girl was gone.
The girl might be hiding secrets, but her lineage wasn't one of them. She had no idea that witch blood flowed strong in her mortal veins.
A crippled leg and a few chains, and you're in love.
Abraxos nudged her with his snout, and Manon gave him a firm but gentle slap before leaning against his warm hide and ripping open the letter addressed in her grandmother's handwriting. Just like the High Witch of the Blackbeak clan, it was brutal, to the point, and unforgiving.
Do not disobey the Duke's orders. Do not question him. If there is another letter from Morath about your disobedience, I will fly down there myself and hang you by your intestines, with your 13 and that runt of a beast beside you. 3 yellow legs and 2 blue blood covens are arriving tomorrow. See to it that there are no fights or trouble. I do not need the other matrons breathing down my neck about their vermin.
Manon turned the paper over, but that was it. Crunching it in a fist, she sighed. Abraxos nudged at her again, and she idly stroked his head.
Maid, maid, maid.
That was what the Kraken had said before Manon slit her throat.
You were made into monsters.
She tried to forget it. Tried to tell herself that the Kraken had been a fanatic and a preachy twat. But she ran a finger down the deep red cloth of her cloak. The thoughts opened up like a precipice before her. So many all at once that she stepped back. Turned away.
Maid. Maid. Maid.
Manon climbed into the saddle and was glad to lose herself in the sky.
Tell me about the Vog, Manon said, shutting the door to the small chamber behind her.
Ghislaine didn't look up from the book she was poring over. There was a stack of them on the desk before her, and another beside the narrow bed, where the eldest and cleverest of her 13 had gotten them from, who she'd likely gutted to steal them. Manon didn't care.
Hello, and come right in, why don't you? Was the response.
Manon leaned against the door and crossed her arms. Only with books. Only when reading was Ghislaine so snappish. On the battlefield, in the air, the dark-skinned witch was quiet, easy to command. A solid soldier, made more valuable by her razor-sharp intelligence, which had earned her the spot among the 13. Ghislaine shut the book and twisted in her seat. Her black curly hair was braided back, but even the plait couldn't keep it entirely contained. She narrowed her sea-green eyes, the shame of her mother, as there wasn't a trace of gold in them.
Why would you want to know about the Vog?
Do you know about them?
Ghislaine pivoted on her chair until she was sitting backward in it, her legs straddling the sides. She was in her flying leathers, as if she couldn't be bothered to remove them before falling into one of her books.
Of course I know about the Vog, she said with a wave of her hand, an impatient mortal gesture.
It had been an exception, an unprecedented exception, when Ghislaine's mother had convinced the High Witch to send her daughter to a mortal school in Terrasen 100 years ago. She had learned magic and book things and whatever else mortals were taught. And when Ghislaine had returned 12 years later, the witch had been different, still a Blackbeak. Still bloodthirsty, but somehow more human. Even now, a century later, even after walking on and off killing fields. That sense of impatience, of life, clung to her. Manon had never known what to make of it.
Tell me everything.
There's too much to tell you in one sitting, Ghislaine said. But I'll give you the basics, and if you want more, you can come back.
An order, but this was Ghislaine's space, and books and knowledge were her domain.
Manon motioned with an iron-tipped hand for her sentinel to go on.
Millennia ago, when the Volg broke into our world, witches did not exist. It was the Volg and the Fae and humans. But the Volg were demons, I suppose. They wanted our world for their own, and they thought a good way to get it would be to ensure that their offspring could survive here. The humans weren't compatible, too breakable. But the Fae. The Volg kidnapped and stole whatever Fae they could. And because your eyes are getting that glazed look, I'm just going to jump to the end and say the offspring became us. Witches. The Iron Teeth took after our Volg ancestors more, while the Krokens got more of the Fae traits. The people of these lands didn't want us here, not after the war. But the Fae King Brannan didn't think it was right to hunt us all down. So he gave us the Western Wastes, and there we went, until the Witch Wars made us exiles again. Manon picked at her nails.
And the Volg are wicked?
We are wicked, Ghislaine said. The Volg? Legend has it that they're the origin of evil. They are blackness and despair incarnate.
Sounds like our kind of people. And maybe good ones indeed to ally with. To breed with.
But Ghislaine's smile faded. No, she said softly. No, I do not think they would be our kind of people at all. They have no laws, no codes. They would see the 13 as weak for our bonds and rules, as something to break for amusement.
Manon stiffened slightly. And if the Volg were ever to return here?
Brannan and the Fae Queen Maeve found ways to defeat them, to send them back. I would hope that someone would find a way to do so again.
More to think about.
She turned, but Ghislaine said, That's the smell, isn't it? The smell here, around some of the soldiers. Like it's wrong, from another world. The king found some way to bring them here and stuff them into human bodies.
She hadn't thought that far, but...
The Duke described them as allies. That word does not exist for the Volg. They find the alliance useful, but will honor it only as long as it remains that way.
Manon debated the merits of ending the conversation there, but said,
The Duke asked me to pick a blackbeak coven for him to experiment on, to allow him to insert some sort of stone in their bellies that will create a Volg Iron Teeth child.
Slowly, Ghislaine straightened,
her ink-splattered hands hanging slack on either side of the chair.
And do you plan to obey, lady?
Not a question from a scholar to a curious student, but from a sentinel to her heir. The High Witch has given me orders to obey the Duke's every command.
But maybe she would write her grandmother another letter.
Who will you pick?
Manon opened the door.
I don't know. My decision is due in 2 days.
Ghislaine, whom Manon had seen glut herself on the blood of men, had paled by the time Manon shut the door.
Manon didn't know how. Didn't know if the guards or the Duke or Vernon or some eavesdropping human filth said something.
But the next morning, the witches all knew.
She knew better than to suspect Ghislaine. None of the 13 talked. Ever. But everyone knew about the Volg, and about Manon's choice. She strode into the dining hall, its black arches glinting in the rare morning sun. Already, the pounding of the forges was ringing out in the valley below, made louder by the silence that fell as she strode between the tables, headed for her seat at the front of the room. Coven after coven watched, and she met their gazes, teeth out and nails drawn, Sorrel a steady force of nature at her back. It wasn't until Manon slid into her place beside Asterin and realized it was now the wrong place, but didn't move, that chatter resumed in the hall. She pulled a hunk of bread toward her, but didn't touch it. None of them ate the food,
Breakfast and dinner were always for show, to have a presence here. The 13 didn't say a word. Manon stared each and every one of them down until they dropped their eyes. But when her gaze met Astarin's, the witch held it. "Do you have something you want to say?" Manon said to her. "Or do you just want to start swinging?" Astarin's eyes flicked over Manon's shoulder. "We have guests." Manon found the leader of one of the newly arrived Yellowlegs covens standing at the foot of the table, eyes downcast, posture unthreatening, complete submission. "What?" Manon demanded. The coven leader kept her head low.
"We would request your consideration for the Duke's task, wing leader."
Astarin stiffened, along with many of the 13. The nearby tables had also gone silent. "And why," Manon asked, "would you want to do that?"
"You will force us to do your drudgery work, to keep us from glory on the killing fields. That is the way of our clans. But we might win a different sort of glory in this way."
Manon held in her sigh, weighing, contemplating. "I will consider it." The coven leader bowed and backed away. Manon couldn't decide whether she was a fool or cunning or brave. None of the 13 spoke for the rest of breakfast.
"And what coven wing leader have you selected for me?"
Manon met the Duke's stare. "A coven of Yellowlegs under a witch named Ninya arrived earlier this week. Use them."
"I wanted Blackbeaks."
"You're getting Yellowlegs," Manon snapped. Down the table, Caltaine did not react. "They volunteered." Better than Blackbeaks, she told herself. Better that the Yellowlegs had offered themselves. Even if Manon could have refused them. She doubted Ghislaine was wrong about the nature of the Volg. But maybe this could work to their advantage, depending on how the Yellowlegs fared. The Duke flashed his yellowing teeth.
"You toe a dangerous line, wing leader."
"All witches have to in order to fly wyverns." Vernon leaned forward.
"These wild immortal things are so diverting, your grace."
Manon gave him a long, long look that told Vernon that one day, in a shadowy hallway, he would find himself with the claws of this wild, immortal thing in his belly. Manon turned to go. Sorrel, not Astarin, stood stone-faced by the door. Another jarring sight. Then Manon turned back to the Duke, the question forming even as she willed herself not to say it. "To what end? Why do all of this? Why ally with the Volg? Why raise this army? Why?" She could not understand it. The continent already belonged to them. It made no sense.
"Because we can,"
the Duke said simply.
"And because this world has too long dwelled in ignorance and archaic tradition, it is time to see what might be improved."
Manon made a show of contemplating, and then nodding, as she strode out. But she had not missed the words, "this world." Not this land, not this continent. This world. She wondered whether her grandmother had considered the idea that they might one day have to fight to keep the wastes, fight the very men who had helped them take back their home, and wondered what would become of these Volg iron teeth witchlings in that world. Chapter 21. He had tried. When the blood-soaked woman had spoken to him, when those turquoise eyes had seemed so familiar, he had tried to wrest away control of his body, his tongue. But the demon prince in him had held firm, delighting in his struggle. He had sobbed with relief when she trapped it and raised an ancient blade over his head. Then she had hesitated. And then that other woman had fired an arrow, and she had put down the sword and left. Left him still trapped with the demon. He could not remember her name, refused to remember her name, even as the man on the throne questioned him about the incident. Even as he returned to the exact spot in the garden and prodded the discarded shackles lying in the gravel. She had left him, and with good reason. The demon prince had wanted to feed on her, and then hand her over. but he wished she had killed him. He hated her for not killing him.
Chapter 22 Kaol left his watch on the roof of Aelin's apartment the moment the hooded head of one of the rebels appeared and signaled that he would take over. Thank the gods. He didn't bother stopping in the apartment to see how Adian was holding up. Each of his pounding steps on the wooden stairs accented the raging, thunderous beat of his heart, until it was all he could hear, all he could feel. With the other rebels lying low or monitoring the city, and Nezrin gone to make sure her father wasn't in danger, Kaol found himself alone as he stalked through the city streets. Everyone had their orders. Everyone was where they were supposed to be. Nezrin had already told him Ress and Brello had given her the signal that all was clear on their end. And now... Liar. Aelin was and had always been a goddamned liar. She was as much an oathbreaker as he was. Worse. Dorian wasn't gone. He wasn't. And he didn't give a shit how much Aelin trumpeted about mercy for Dorian, or that she said it was a weakness not to kill him. The weakness lay in his death. That's what he should have said. The weakness lay in giving up. He stormed down an alley. He should have been hiding as well. But the roaring in his blood and bones was unrelenting. A sewer grate rang beneath his feet. He paused and peered into the blackness below. There were still things to do. So many things to do. So many people to keep from harm. And now that Aelin had yet again humiliated the king, he had no doubt that the Vogue would round up more people as punishment, as a statement. With the city still in an uproar, perhaps it was the perfect time for him to strike, to even the odds between them. No one saw as he climbed into the sewer, closing the lid overhead. Tunnel after tunnel, his sword gleaming in the afternoon light streaming in through the grates. Kaol hunted those Vogue pieces of filth, his steps near silent. They usually kept to their nests of darkness, but every now and then stragglers prowled the tunnels. Some of their nests were small, only three or four of them guarding their prisoners, or meals, he supposed. Easy enough for him to ambush. And wouldn't it be wonderful to see those demon heads roll? Gone. Dorian is gone. Aelin didn't know everything. Fire or beheading couldn't be the only choices. Maybe he would keep one of the Vogue commanders alive, see just how far gone the man inside of the demon truly was. Maybe there was another way. There had to be another way. Tunnel after tunnel after tunnel. All the usual haunts, and no sign of them. Not one. Kaol hurried into a near run as he headed for the largest nest he knew of, where they'd always been able to find civilians in need of rescuing, if they were lucky enough to catch the guards unawares. He would save them, because they deserved it, and because he had to keep at it, or else he would crumble and... Kaol stared at the gaping mouth of the main nest. Watery sunlight filtering from above illuminated the gray stones and the little river at the bottom. No sign of the telltale darkness that usually smothered it like a dense fog. Empty. The Vogue soldiers had vanished and taken their prisoners with them. He didn't think they'd gone into hiding from fear. They'd moved on, concealing themselves and their prisoners, as a giant, laughing go-to-hell to every rebel who'd actually thought they were winning this secret war. To Kaol. He should have thought of pitfalls like this. Should have considered what might happen when Aelin Galathinius made a fool of the king and his men. He should have considered the cost. Maybe he was the fool. There was a numbness in his blood as he emerged from the sewers onto a quiet street. It was the thought of sitting in his ramshackle apartment, utterly alone with that numbness, that sent him southward, trying to avoid the streets that still teemed with panicked people. Everyone demanded to know what had happened, who had been killed, who had done it. The decorations and baubles and food vendors had been entirely forgotten. The sounds eventually died away, the streets clearing out as he reached a residential district where the homes were of modest size but elegant, well kept. Little streams and fountains of water from the Avery flowed throughout,
lending themselves to the surplus of blooming spring flowers at every gate, windowsill, and tiny lawn. He knew the house from the smell alone. Fresh-baked bread, cinnamon, and some other spice he couldn't name. Taking the alley between the two pale-stoned houses, he kept to the shadows as he approached the back door, peering through the pane of glass to the kitchen within. Flour coated a large work table, along with baking sheets, various mixing bowls, and... The door swung open, and Nezrin's slim form filled the entryway.
"What are you doing here?"
She was back in her guard's uniform, a knife tucked behind her thigh. She'd no doubt spotted an intruder approaching her father's house and readied herself. Kael tried to ignore the weight pushing down on his back, threatening to snap him in two. Adian was free. They'd accomplished that much. But how many other innocents had they doomed today? Nezrin didn't wait for his reply before she said, "Come in." The guards came and went. My father sent them on their way with pastries. Kael glanced up from his own pear tart and scanned the kitchen. Bright tiles accented the walls behind the counters in pretty shades of blue, orange, and turquoise. He'd never been to Saeed Falik's house before, but he'd known where it was, just in case. He'd never let himself consider what that just in case might entail. Showing up like a stray dog at the back door hadn't been it.
They didn't suspect him?
No. They just wanted to know whether he or his workers saw anyone who looked suspicious before Adian's rescue. Nezrin pushed another pastry, this one almond and sugar, toward him. Is the general all right?
As far as I know.
He told her about the tunnels, the Vog. Nezrin only said, "So we'll find them again, tomorrow." He waited for her to pace, to shout and swear. But she remained steady, calm. Some tight part of him uncoiled. She tapped a finger on the wooden table, lovingly worn, as if the kneading of a thousand loaves of bread had smoothed it out.
"Why did you come here?"
"For distraction."
There was a suspicious gleam in those midnight eyes of hers. Enough so that he said,
"Not for that."
She didn't even blush, though his own cheeks burned. If she had offered, he probably would have said yes, and hated himself for it.
"You're welcome here," she said. "But surely your friends at the apartment, the general, at least, would provide better company."
"Are they my friends?"
"You and Her Majesty have done a great job trying to be anything but."
"It's hard to be friends without trust."
"You are the one who went to Arabin again, even after she warned you not to."
"And he was right,"
Kael said.
"He said she would promise not to touch Dorian and then do the opposite."
And he would be forever grateful for the warning shot Nezrin had fired. Nezrin shook her head, her dark hair glimmering.
"Let's just imagine that Aelin is right, that Dorian is gone. What then?"
"She's not right."
"Let's just imagine..."
He slammed his fist on the table hard enough to rattle his glass of water.
"She's not right."
Nezrin pursed her lips, even as her eyes softened.
"Why?"
He scrubbed at his face.
"Because then it's all for nothing. Everything that happened, it's all for nothing. You wouldn't understand."
"I wouldn't?"
A cold question.
"You think that I don't understand what's at stake? I don't care about your prince, not the way you do. I care about what he represents for the future of this kingdom. And for the future of people like my family, I won't allow another immigrant purge to happen. I don't ever want my sister's children coming home with broken noses again because of their foreign blood. You told me Dorian would fix the world, make it better. But if he's gone, if we made the mistake today in keeping him alive, then I will find another way to retain that future. And another one after that if I have to. I will keep getting back up, no matter how many times those butchers shove me down."
He'd never heard so many words from her at once. Had never even known she had a sister. Or that she was an aunt. Nezrin said,
"Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Stay the course, but also plot another one. Adapt.
His mouth had gone dry.
Were you ever hurt? For your heritage?
Nezrin glanced toward the roaring hearth, her face like ice.
I became a city guard because not a single one of them came to my aid the day the other schoolchildren surrounded me with stones in their hands. Not one, even though they could hear my screaming. She met his stare again. Dorian Havilyard offers a better future. But the responsibility also lies with us, with how common people choose to act.
True, so true. But he said,
I won't abandon him.
She sighed. You're even more hard-headed than the Queen.
Would you expect me to be anything else?
A half-smile. I don't think I would like you if you were anything but a stubborn ass.
You actually admit to liking me?
Did last summer not tell you enough? Despite himself, Kaol laughed. Tomorrow, Nezrin said. Tomorrow we continue on. He swallowed.
Stay the course, but plot a new path.
He could do that.
He could try it, at least.
See you in the sewers, bright and early. Chapter 23 Adian rose to consciousness and took in every detail that he could without opening his eyes. A briny breeze from a nearby open window tickled his face. Fishermen were shouting their catches a few blocks away. And someone was breathing evenly, deeply, nearby, sleeping. He opened an eye to find that he was in a small wood-paneled room decorated with care and a penchant for the luxurious. He knew this room. Knew this apartment. The door across from his bed was open, revealing the great room beyond. Clean and empty and bathed in sunshine. The sheets he slept between were crisp and silken. The pillows plush, the mattress impossibly soft. Exhaustion coated his bones, and pain splintered through his side, but dully. And his head was infinitely clearer as he looked toward the source of that even, deep breathing, and beheld the woman asleep in the cream-colored armchair beside the bed. Her long, bare legs were sprawled over one of the rolled arms, scars of every shape and size adorning them. She rested her head against the wing, her shoulder-length golden hair, the ends stained a reddish-brown, as if a cheap dye had been roughly washed out, strewn across her face. Her mouth was slightly open as she dozed, comfortable in an oversized white shirt, and what looked to be a pair of men's undershorts. Safe. Alive. For a moment, he couldn't breathe. Aelin. He mouthed her name. As if she heard it, she opened her eyes, coming fully alert as she scanned the doorway, the room beyond, then the bedroom itself for any danger. And then finally, she looked at him and went utterly still, even as her hair shifted in the gentle breeze. The pillow beneath his face had become damp. She just stretched out her legs like a cat and said, I'm ready to accept your thanks for my spectacular rescue at any time, you know. He couldn't stop the tears leaking down his face, even as he rasped,
Remind me never to get on your bad side.
A smile tugged at her lips, and her eyes, their eyes, sparkled. Hello, Adian. Hearing his name on her tongue snapped something loose, and he had to close his eyes, his body barking in pain as it shook with the force of the tears trying to get out of him. When he'd mastered himself, he said hoarsely,
Thank you for your spectacular rescue. Let's never do it again.
She snorted, her eyes lined with silver. You're exactly the way I dreamed you'd be. Something in her smile told him that she already knew, that Ren or Kaol had told her about him, about being Otterland's whore, about the Bane. So all he could say was, You're a little taller than I'd imagined, but no one's perfect. It's a miracle the king managed to resist executing you until yesterday.
Tell me he's in a rage the likes of which have never been seen before.
If you listen hard enough, you can actually hear him shrieking from the palace. Adian laughed, and it made his wound ache. But the laugh died as he looked her over from head to toe.
I'm going to throttle Ren and the captain for letting you save me alone.
And here we go. She looked at the ceiling and sighed loudly. A minute of pleasant conversation, and then the territorial Fey bullshit comes raging out.
I waited an extra 30 seconds.